Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg recently appeared before Congress and apologized to parents for the harm that Facebook has done to their children. Zuckerberg agreed to put further controls on the unhealthy and dangerous aspects of social media use, especially as to how it's misused. Now, here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, a bill has been proposed to require social media companies to get parental consent before their children register a social media account. Of course, the goal is to protect them from being subjected to predators, bullying, and harassment online. And joining us to talk further about this is State Representative Josh Calloway. Josh, welcome to the Commonwealth Matters.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Hey, really appreciate what you are doing in the state legislature. You and I were just talking before the program began about some of the different bills and issues that you're working on. And one of the things that you mentioned was that it's important that we keep talking about these issues. I think sometimes people are afraid to talk and dialogue about what's going on. People don't want to stir things up or come across as judgmental. But when you have an issue like this, and we'll talk about the social media bill here in a moment, along with other bills, but when you have issues that impact our children, that affect morality in their worlds, public decency bills, it's important that adults and particularly parents stand in the gap and engage these issues in a thoughtful and a responsible way. Because you and I know, and it's very clear to those who are tuned in to the Commonwealth Matters, that the world isn't a safe place. There are a lot of messages that are bombarding our children that are unhealthy. There are a lot of pitfalls and traps that our children can fall into that can really hurt them. And it is so important that we keep these conversations going and then stand in the gap for their protection and for their safety. And Josh, I just wanted to say thank you for being one of the guys in the state legislature that's doing that. So tell us, what prompted you, if you would, to file House Bill 450? And again, this is the bill that requires social media companies to verify age of the users before they register.
Yes, sir. So first of all, you know, one of the primary reasons that I ran for office revolved around my heart for young people and for the generations coming behind us. And so we are in a war for our children in America. You know, really, it's an international problem. But we have seen an attack on our youth unlike we have never seen before. And it's really for their minds. If the devil gets their mind, he gets their heart and gets complete control of them. And so I've been thinking through different things that is used to target them. And we know for a fact social media is one of those particular things, from algorithms to predators to explicit content. All of those things are actually set up. It is set to bring them into that sphere and cause them to continue to want more of it. And so it feeds on whatever it is that they're searching, they're looking, and it begins to give them more and more content. And what we have seen is that it just takes it to another level and continuously goes deeper and darker. And so many different situations I could talk to you about. I had a mother that came to me, and she was talking to me during the interim and said that her son was 15 years old, was playing an online video game with whom she thought was people that he knew, connected with, friends. And before it was all said and done, a predator had reached out to him, got him to go offline, not offline, but onto another platform that was actually more secluded, and ended up leaving home, headed to the airport to go meet somebody whom he had never met, a man, not knowing what type of situation he was going to get into just because the predatory nature of what happened. And this man absolutely groomed him into this. And thankfully, miraculously, some things happened that put the parents in the middle right before the situation got to, before it almost couldn't be undone. and they were able to get him some help, and he's getting some help. But it was absolutely this technology that led him down that path and that pulled him into it.
So you have one aspect of this modern technology where young kids can access the internet, and either through social media or through gaming platforms, they're interacting with complete strangers that I would guess if parents saw a stranger, maybe an older man at the playground trying to interact with their kids, they'd be alarmed. But they have no idea that their kids could be playing, their teenage kids could be playing with older men who are really groomers. They're pedophiles. And that's part of the danger with social media. Josh, another part that you had mentioned was, you mentioned algorithms. And this is the part that Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook has been guilty of, is that they know what kind of content the users like and what they are prone to keeping, what will keep them on longer. And so I'm thinking the reels, you know, the kind of mindless reels are there, which keeps the kids on longer. It's a lot of it's mindless. And one of the aspects of this is that we're talking about minors whose brains are still developing. I don't know if we fully understand and appreciate what prolonged social media use does, the scrolling through Facebook or looking at hours and hours of these reels. I don't know if we fully understand or what kind of research has been done out there, but we do know that with young children, there's certain things that we should keep them from. And we already do that, don't we? From alcohol, tobacco, they can't drive till they're 16. They don't vote till they're 18. So why in the world, Josh, have we not regulated social media registration and accounts? By the way, you may know this, but in other countries, they restrict social media use of minors. Germany, Ireland, Switzerland, they cannot access digital content or have a platform until they're at least 16 years old. And in this regard, those European nations are ahead of the United States. So what's going on here? Why haven't we thought of this before, that this is kind of like a drug? We're talking about kids who are still growing, their minds are still developing, and this might not be a good idea for them.
That's exactly what's happened. So there is an absolute addictive nature to these platforms. And just in the last week and a half or so, we saw some of these company owners testify on Capitol Hill. And you see that it is all about money to them. These young people that partake in on their platforms are just customers to them. And that is how they view it. And so I think we have. I think parents have fell asleep at the wheel. And I think in government, a lot of times, there's some broad issues with this, because the First Amendment rights that we want to make sure that we protect. And I know people have all those concerns. But we have come to a place in our society that this has got so far out of hand because of Section 230. These companies actually have, there's nobody has recourse to be able to come back to these companies and deal with what has happened, at the harm as a result of what they have done. Representative Baker, a good friend of mine in Pulaski County, we were talking the other day, and I don't remember, Brother Richard, the exact number, but somewhere 14 to 17 suicides in their school district over the last year to year and a half period. And a lot of it revolved around this type of platform, whether it was bullying. He's got a bill that he's just filed on sextortion, and that's something that has, you know, become prevalent for young people. They get caught up in this stuff. And man, the devil is sly. He has a way of getting in the door and appearing as if that there's nothing wrong with it. It's harmless, and gets young people hooked.
Josh, and we do know that young kids are suffering from prolonged social media use. You mentioned bullying, sextortion. It causes kids to be isolated as well when they're spending more time on social media in this virtual world. They're not interacting with real people. They don't have the face-to-face time. And they're in this virtual reality, disconnected from real relationships and real people. And I'm not aware of research out there. There could be, but as far as the suicide rate. We do know the numbers that suicide is the second leading cause of death for teens in certain breakdowns. And vaguely, it's something like the 13 through 15 year old, somewhere in that category. And then there's a little gap. And then it's the later teen years or maybe early adult years where suicide, again,
I think it's 15 to 24 overall. It's the second leading cause of death, but there is a breakout a little bit in like the 15 to 18 year olds, but it's unreal.
So we've got to think about why is that? What is contributing to a high suicide rate of young children whose whole future is in front of them? But that's one aspect I want us to think about that's related to this conversation. And the other aspect is loneliness. I believe it was the Centers for Disease Control just recently in the last couple of years said that loneliness is a public health crisis. And one of the things that's changed in recent years with the introduction of social media and smartphones is that more people are spending time in virtual reality, as I said, and they're spending less time developing real relationships. So you have almost like a drug. You have a drug and this platform where people are escaping to, but it's not really helping them. And we're talking about children and what's best for them and how to protect them. Josh, last year, Utah became the first state in the nation to prohibit children under the age of 18 from using social media between the hours of 10:30 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. It required an age verification for anyone who wants to use the social media in the state. And it also opened the doors. There was a cause of action, opened the doors to lawsuits on behalf of children where social media has harmed them. How similar is your bill, House Bill 450, to this, what they did in Utah?
So it is fairly similar. I used the Utah bill to help work off of. Part of what I was trying to do with my bill is get the conversation out there. There's trying to figure out how to do age verification, especially for minors, is something that has been difficult to get consensus on because I think the Utah bill requires a birth certificate. So people are saying, well, we don't want to give a birth certificate of our child to these companies. And my argument to that is, well, we're giving them unfettered knowledge right now. I mean, they get whatever they want from them without the parent knowing. And so I understand that there is a balance there. And I think through some of the litigation that we're going to really see where to land at as some of these law bills, they are being litigated in other states, I think on Arkansas as well. And so as these litigations take place, we will see a little better solid constitutional ground to land on. But it is age verification required for the parent to do the age verification of the child. For the parent, they would give a state-issued ID or picture ID. And then for the child, they would actually do a signed affidavit and so that they were signing under oath that they were the parent. They were allowing them to do that. And then it gives those time parameters required inside that the parent can override or tighten up to allow them to not be on the platform during the nighttime or certain times of the day. So it is a similar bill. We, again, just trying to come to some consensus as well as to how to do the age verification for the child, because we don't want them to get any more information from our kids. And that's what they're doing. They're preying on that information.
Josh, you had mentioned in a media interview the other day that part of your intent in introducing this bill is to, of course, protect children, but to stop the bullying, the harassment, that kind of thing from happening. Are you getting any pushback, or what kind of response are you getting from that? Just right there. You're there to protect kids. Is this something that parents are supportive of? Are you hearing from other parents in your district or across the state?
I have heard from parents that were very supportive of it. As you would imagine, the companies, social media companies and gaming companies are not supportive of it. But parents have reached out to me and said that we're looking for avenues to be able to better manage what our children are doing on social media. The other thing that we have to think about in our society is we've got young people who don't have parental involvement or engagement. And we have to have a way to try to protect them as best as we can. there's also been some pushback from people that want this unfettered grab for information and interaction for children out there, and try to make this about that there's certain speech or certain groups that we're trying to keep from interacting with each other. And it's not that at all. But you brought up something that I think it's important when you talk about bullying and you talk about all those negative things that happen in a non-real atmosphere, which is social media. You know this, being a conservative organization in the state of Kentucky, me trying to stand on principles that people will say things through a social media avenue that they would not say to you in person. And so it really removes that personal aspect out of it. And I think we have children that are suffering from the ability to even have interaction of personable skills just because they have lived so much in this atmosphere, and it's not real.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Hi, my name is Richard Nelson, founder and executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. We're here to shore up the sanctity of human life, religious freedom, natural marriage, and sound fiscal policies. At the Commonwealth Matters, we have conversations with leading thinkers and policymakers to help us think biblically about the great issues of the day. If you appreciate our work, then please consider a donation today. This work is entirely supported by people just like you. Your gifts and tax-deductible contributions help to underwrite this program, and you help to get this important message out all across the Commonwealth. We believe that the Commonwealth of Kentucky is a great place to live, and we want to keep it that way for our families and our children. That's why we're standing for what's right, for what's good, and what's true right here in Kentucky. Thanks in advance for your support, and may God bless you. If you're just joining us and tuning in, you are watching The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with State Representative Josh Calloway. Josh, I'd like to pivot over to House Bill 191. And this is a bill that's kind of a take or a follow-up from an issue last year that came up. Senate Bill 5 was introduced to give recourse for parents who objected to material in their public schools, whether it's their library or maybe curriculum, and they thought it was pornographic or not appropriate for kids. And that bill did pass into law, but it wasn't passed in the original version. Some of the things were watered down in it. But your bill, House Bill 191, is pretty simple and straightforward. And it deals with some of the materials in the public schools. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, sir. So the Senate Bill 5 that we passed last year, there were some things that we really thought should be in it. We even added some amendments to that bill to try to strengthen it. But it was a step in a direction. There was some great people that had advocated for this cause, and they said, hey, this is movement. We haven't got any movement, specifically a situation in JCPS, a school system, that there was just no recourse for the parent at all. And so it gave them a process that they could appeal if it didn't come out as they desired for it to. And so we ended up just having a process that parents could complain, make a formal complaint about a sexually explicit or pornographic material, and then it would be required to be removed while it was being reviewed, and then a committee put together to make a final decision on that book. What this bill says, it's just very simple. It says this: if a parent or guardian can't come and read it, if it's too sexually explicit or too graphic to read in a school board meeting, get it out of the school district. And I think it's common sense legislation. I mean, a lot of things we do in Frankfort maybe doesn't have a lot of common sense to it, but this is as common sense as it gets. If you're going to shut a parent down from reading it in this school board meeting, just take it out of the school district. No child should see it.
Let's move to another important issue, and it's the issue of gender ideology in public schools, particularly pushed by the federal government. The courts have ruled that Title IX extends to just beyond females, but it extends to gender identity protections. And you have the U.S. Department of Education, for example, saying that if you receive any federal funding regarding Title IX, then you have to acknowledge the chosen gender identity of the students in the school, which means then they can use the bathrooms or locker rooms of their choice, or join the sports team of their choice, however they, whatever gender they identify with. But you proposed a bill, House Bill 652, that pushes back against this. Josh, tell us a little bit about what's behind that.
Yes, sir. So there's some federal guidelines that it looks like are going to come down before too long, that the federal government's going to take a stance on this and require that gender identity be added to our Title IX laws. And so basically, I filed a bill that just says this, that we will exercise our state sovereignty and we will not comply with any additions to gender identity to Title IX, male and female. That's the way it's going to be, and it's going to stay that way in the state of Kentucky. So it's just an emphatic statement. There are some concerns from people that brought them up because of funding that comes as a result of Title IX compliance. And I address that in the bill, and we'll have to address that when we get there. But I think it's important that as the state of Kentucky, if we let the federal government know that we basically are saying, you have lost your mind and we're not going to comply. We're not going to go down this path. Not for our society. This is not what we want for Kentucky.
Very good. Josh, the Parental Rights and Education Bill, House Bill 304, has been introduced. You're one of the co-sponsors on this bill, and this deals with, in particular, school personnel, especially a guidance counselor, that would hide a child's perceived gender identity from their parents. It essentially restores the parental rights, and it makes the really requires schools to disclose this to parents. Tell us a little bit more about this bill and its prospects.
Yes, sir. So this is also doing some cleanup from Senate Bill 150 that we passed the last session that dealt with many things inside of the school system. It dealt with the state of undress in regard to bathroom locker rooms, those types of things. It dealt with the gender reassignment surgeries and therapies, treatments, abuse is what I call it. And so there was a lot that was inside of that bill. There were some things that needed to be cleaned up in it and some language that two of the school districts said they wouldn't comply with because there was the word or instead of the word and. And so we were cleaning that up. But specifically to what you're talking about, we had a situation here in the state of Kentucky just in the last year of something that was just unthinkable happened in regard to a child who was struggling with a relationship that they were having with a person inside of their school. It was another student. They got connected with a counselor. Before it was all said and done, the parents were totally pushed out of the situation, had no idea of what was going on. The daughter's grades began to drop. Terrible situation. It should never happen. The parents are the first line of defense for any struggle that a child has. And so this bill basically gives those specific things. If you know this is going on with someone's child, as a responsible adult, let the parent know and let them engage and be able to help their child for whatever it is that they're dealing with.
You'd mentioned the school choice issue, and we'll close on this topic. Tell us about the effort to expand school choice or education freedom. That's the term that people are using today.
Yes, sir. So basically where we are at as a state, because of two bills that we have filed in the past that would have opened the door for school choice or educational freedom, here in the state of Kentucky, both of those bills, which was House Bill 563 from the 2021 session and then House Bill 9 from the 2022 session, were shot down by the state Supreme Court. And basically what they told us from House Bill 563 if you want to have educational freedom in the state of Kentucky, you're going to have to do a constitutional amendment. And so we began the work on one last session that would have went on the ballot this November in the November election for 2024. And refiled a bill for that, House Bill 208, this session. And then House Bill 2 was filed by Caucus Leader Representative Miles. And so what we've been doing up to this point is just working on the language. We got to have constitutionally strong language. We have to have language that the public will vote for, language that we can get out the General Assembly that the legislators will vote for. And then we also have to have something that withstands the adversity of the state Supreme Court that we have every single time that we do something in this realm. They always push back against it. And so we've been working on that language, and this is kind of where we are. I think there's going to be some new language that will be coming out. House Bill 2 will be the vehicle that moves forward for educational freedom. If we pass this constitutional amendment this session, it will be most likely through House Bill 2. And so we'll see that new language that comes out and try to get that moving forward, get it passed out of the General Assembly. And then what will happen is that the governor will veto that bill most likely. And so we will override the governor's veto. This November, there will be a question on the ballot asking the voters, do you want to authorize the legislature to open up educational freedom and school choice in the state of Kentucky? And so the people get to weigh in on it at that point.
Very good. State Representative Josh Calloway, we so appreciate you working for education freedom and standing for parental rights and for public decency. You have been a leader in Frankfort, a leader in your district. And we value and appreciate the work that you're doing. Thank you for the listeners. If you appreciate the program, The Commonwealth Matters, we ask two things. Could you please go to your favorite podcast platform and rate us? That really helps our work here. Secondly, could you tell your friends about The Commonwealth Matters podcast? This is the best way that others learn of us and would start listening to us. So again, thank you for tuning in. Josh Calloway, thank you again for joining us, and may God bless you.